My name is Liam O'Fallon. I'm with the Environment Section here at the American Public Health Association. I work with the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and it is my pleasure to moderate this session today on health and hydrofracking, community outreach and information needs. I would like to first point out that we are going to be going in a slightly different order than what is shown in the book. So the presentation order today, in case you have your agenda in front of you, is going to be Dr. Katrina Korfmacher, followed by Sarah Elam, then Kathleen Gray, and rounding out today's session will be Ann Backus. We have four very fine presentations today that are going to be talking about hydraulic fracturing. In this presentation, they will be referring to it as unconventional natural gas drilling. It is a mouthful, but just in terms of, you know, setting the context and the mental images that we have here. So when you hear that term, it's hydrofracking. So these four projects come from our community outreach and engagement cores, which is a network of cores that are part of our environmental health sciences core centers across the United States. The topic of hydraulic fracturing has been at the forefront for the past year. They've been working collaboratively to assess and understand what the community and other audiences need in terms of information as it relates to this very important topic of hydraulic fracturing. So I don't want to take up any more of their time. We will be holding questions for the presenters until after all four of them have spoken to ensure that we have the most time for Q&As and also for our presenters. So first is Katrina Korfmacher from the University of Rochester.
Thanks, Liam. It's really exciting to be able to give this presentation today, nothing to disclose, because we've been working collaboratively for quite some time now on trying to assess needs for information about health and hydrofracking. And we did our study comparatively among three different states, but we're going to place our results a little bit differently for you today. So I just want to tell you how we're going to go about doing that. So first of all, I'm going to talk to you about how we structured and the motivations for doing this information needs assessment. And then Sarah's going to talk about some of the implications for communication, for how people learn about this topic and how they want to hear about future research findings, and then what our implications are for research going forward, and then some of the next steps. And then Ann Backus, who was not part of this same project, but has been working in parallel on a mapping project that will build on many of the ideas that we discussed in our study, will follow on. So that's the overview of our whole session. My job is to talk about our overall study and its structures, and then to highlight some of the health concerns that community members talk to us about. So we call our study a health information needs assessment. And as Liam says, it's a collaboration between three NIHS core centers in North Carolina, New York, and Ohio. And it was funded by an administrative supplement in 2012 and 2013. We were motivated by hearing about the impacts of hydrofracking in other states, but also by the broader conversation that the COICs have had in lots of different environmental health issue areas, particularly thinking about disaster response and how something will happen in the environment and we won't know the impacts of it. We'll try to be researching it after the fact. And many times the community's concerns work in parallel and emerge after the research has already gotten underway. And we discover in doing that that sometimes the community had different questions than the research is addressing, different concerns, and sometimes they're right. So wouldn't it be great if before a disaster happened, we actually did some research and found out what communities were concerned about and used that to help inform the research agenda? So that was our goal here. We wanted to inform research priorities as they're being formulated for looking at the health impacts of hydrofracking, and also to gain insight in how research can be conducted and communicated in an ongoing fashion. Because I think we all accept that that is a desired and beneficial goal, to collaboratively conduct research, but how can you actually do that, especially in an issue area that's so politically fraught? And then finally, because this is a currently a current phenomenon, we wanted to inform ongoing efforts to communicate about the health effects of hydrofracking in the face of great uncertainties. So just a little bit of context, we are looking at three really different places. New York, where hydraulic fracturing is not allowed, but the state has been actively considering how and under what circumstances to permit it since about 2009. The last draft and generic environmental impact statement got over 100,000 public comments, and polls still show that public opinion is very, very split. I just put up a map to show you that municipalities, meanwhile, have taken things into their own hands, and all of those areas that are highlighted on the map either have in place moratorium or considering moratorium on fracking. Okay, and in North Carolina, also currently not allowed, but the North Carolina Mining and Energy Commission is developing regulations by 2014 under which it can proceed, and so that it is on hold now until those regulations are developed. And Ohio is the only state that we looked at where hydraulic fracturing is actually occurring. Especially at the beginning part of our study, it was in its early days and primarily in the southeastern corner of the state, right? So here there have been hundreds of wells drilled and permitted, and is expected to expand rapidly in the near future. So the four key questions that we were looking at were: what are communities' primary health concerns? And second, arising from that, what research do they believe is necessary to inform decisions before going forward or expanding hydrofracking in the future? And then third is, how have community members sought information about health impacts? So what sources of information do they find most useful and credible? And that can help us inform future communication strategies as research findings emerge. So again, trying to look at these things partnered going forward as scientific research proceeds. Our methodology was to recruit knowledgeable community leaders. We made no attempt to get a representative public sample. I did a public opinion survey, a representative sample of citizens. We really wanted to say, for individuals who had some concern and went out and sought information, where did they look, what were they able to find, and what did they make of it, right? So we were looking for informed community leaders, but coming from different perspectives and occupying different roles within their community. So for this purpose, exploratory and open-ended interview was most appropriate. We did 43 of them. They lasted between 30 and 90 minutes each. We have more individuals than interviews because sometimes people wanted to be interviewed with a colleague or spouse or friend. We did a full transcription of all of our interviews, and then because we had this built-in team, it was a wonderful collaborative opportunity as we were going to digest these transcripts, decode them for set themes and emergent themes, and to reconcile those as we went along. So, as I said, we had 43 interviews total, fairly evenly divided among the three states, but I also wanted to show you that we had representation of different primary roles. So public health professionals, local government representatives, environmental groups, residents, and professional education and outreach workers. Many of these people wore several hats, as all of us do, but this is their primary self-identification. Similarly, we tried to get people to identify where they stood on the issue so that we would have a sense of whether people's health concerns varied by their position on hydrofracking. So about 20 of our interviews were very clearly and openly opposed to hydrofracking. Six of them were openly and clearly supportive, but a large number claimed to be neutral. And we can talk about that a little more later if you like. Now I'm going to shift into briefly giving you an overview of the health concerns. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because the list of them isn't very surprising. These are all of the issues that more than 20% of our interviews raised. What are air, trucks, quality of life, public health systems, impacts on agriculture and wildlife, traffic, noise and nuisance, worker health, and specifically radioactive material. One of the things that was really striking to us is that names of diseases did not come up very often. It really was the determinants of disease and how hydrofracking was likely to affect those. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the purple things there, because trucks is a little complicated category. A lot of people were worried about trucks, and then when you probe further, they were really worried about air quality, or they were really worried about their roads, or accidents, or spills, or all lumped together. So how to slice this data was a recurring challenge, and but I'm going to focus on these four purple ones first. So water was the clear winner in terms of the issue that most people talked about, air being a close second. I don't want to pay much attention to numbers of interviews because this was not a quantitative study. But what we did is we just grouped our findings to give us a sense of patterns that were worth exploring more in our qualitative data. So I'm going to emphasize that by sharing some quotations for you. One example of a pattern that we thought worth exploring is, even though we're only talking about 43 interviews, look at the quality of life numbers here. Half the people in New York mentioned it, 77% of the people in North Carolina. You must have a very high quality of life is what I'm figuring there. People are very worried about it. Ohio, only 29%. And Ohio's the only place where this is actually happening. So that raised some interesting questions for us to look at in greater depth. So water, just to sum up the thoughts of our interviewees, there's a whole area of water concerns from start to finish with fracking, and plenty of opportunity for things to go astray, for people nearby to be really impacted. So we have many specific comments about the kinds of concerns on water quality and how those could translate to human health. But we also had people who said, there is just so much going on and so many unknowns, it's got to affect us somehow. Groundwater contamination was, again, the dominant fear and concern. But surface water contamination from spills, spreading of waste, flooding concerns, and wastewater was also right up there. Water was the main vehicle for concerns about impacts on wildlife and agriculture. And injection wells, particularly in Ohio, where the injection wells have been growing so rapidly, partly because of concerns about groundwater, but largely because of the connections to earthquake. Ohio's the only place where we really heard about drought, and this is a recurrent theme, is that we did find a lot of commonality, but each of these states is very different, and the citizens in each area were very, very aware, both of the lessons they could learn from other states, but also the unique differences. So Ohio was following a couple years of severe drought, and in that state, people were very worried about water quantity. Air quality and health. I think that's what people complain about the most, the noise and the traffic. Your air quality starts to go down because you've got so much diesel in the exhaust. So the initial concern of a lot of folks about air quality was largely related to transportation, but also all the potential for flaring, for leaks, for unintentional emissions of various kinds of chemicals, particularly the diesel, but volatile chemicals. And some people did mention methane, not so many, but those who did largely were tying that into concerns about climate change. Silica sand was also growing in, people were becoming more and more aware of concerns about sand, and that was one where they were focused not just on their location, but on the whole process from start to finish of mining sand, transporting it, and then using it. And air is an area in which concerns about cumulative impacts and transboundary impacts. So in New York, we don't have hydraulic fracturing, but people are very concerned about air quality impacts from Pennsylvania. Air like water was mentioned by 100% of our interviews who were opposed, and a third of those who were supportive of hydrofracking also mentioned it. So quality of life is a large area of a theme that we had difficulty defining because there were so many different concerns. But they included a loss of rural character, again, including traffic, crime, noise, new populations of people moving into small communities, community conflict and stress, and the boom and bust cycle of economics that some people were very concerned about. So we were asking about health concerns, and people were talking to us about what's going to happen economically to my community next, and making connections between that and the overall health of the community. Interestingly, there were the fewest concerns about that in Ohio. Public health systems. There were a variety of concerns related to healthcare, public health, prevention, emergency response. Huge increases in substance abuses that the hospitals see, one person said. Another said, there's going to be maybe an impact on medical services in general, and the free clinic may also find that they need more assistance. Our emergency management people say they're working in the blind because they don't know what chemicals are out there. So a whole suite of concerns, but we grouped them together because there was a big awareness of how additional burdens could affect the overall public health infrastructure of the community. In terms of the existing capacity of healthcare systems, training for emergency responders, knowledge by healthcare providers, emergency workers, and others about what kinds of exposures people might be experiencing. A lot of concern about the gag rule that had recently passed in Pennsylvania and the suite of non-disclosure agreements that make it difficult for public health providers, citizens, community leaders to know what's going on in their own community. And then another common theme was the lack of involvement of public health professionals in planning and decision making for this phenomenon, which is largely dominated by environmental agencies and economic development agencies. Now, I think it's important to point out that a large percentage of our interviewees, including those who were supportive of and opposed to hydrofracking, mentioned different kinds of health benefits. There were health benefits anticipated connected to economic growth and jobs and business, from gas companies directly making donations to the community, for example, expanding a local clinic. One interesting one was a local health department that said, well, hopefully this phenomenon will get people to test their water more, and whether it's, there's bacteria in the water that they would never have found otherwise, this will increase our capacity. Another important theme that emerged was a fairly widespread awareness of vulnerable populations, that this is going to raise all boats. It's not raising all boats, it's raising a few boats real high. And the vulnerable population most often mentioned was workers who would be directly exposed, but also nearby residents who would be directly exposed but 24 hours a day. Low-income people and resident and renters who would be negatively affected by housing values going up but not reaping the benefits and not controlling development. Children and pregnant women because of biological vulnerability, and older adults and those who are chronically ill, particularly with respiratory disease. So I just want to quickly highlight some of the surprises and common themes that we saw going forward. As I mentioned before, we thought that people might be listing out diseases. And that's the way the scientists are approaching this problem is, okay, give me the marker, give me the endpoint, tell me what to measure. And that's just a different way of slicing this problem than the community folks that we talk to, really focusing on the determinants more than disease endpoints. That's an extremely varied definition of health, but the laundry list I just put up there is very diverse. And so the broad definition of health, I think, is something else that's very important to take into consideration. There are a lot of concerns about long-term, unknowable, and uncertain effects, and I want to add one last bullet point here, a really strong awareness of how these concerns change over time, by location, and based on life experience. And that's something I think Kathleen's going to pick up on later, so I will hand it over to Sarah now.